from EWTN, the Global Catholic Network. This is EWTN News Nightly.
The sun sets on the Eternal City, fading behind the dome of St. Peter's Basilica and closing out a mournful week for the city of Rome and the Catholic Church. On Monday, we learned that Pope Francis had passed away. Then the papal apartment in the Casa Santa Marta, where the Holy Father lived during his pontificate, was sealed. On Wednesday, his body was translated to St. Peter's Basilica to lie in state for all the faithful to pay their respects. And this evening, a silk veil was placed over the face of the Holy Father, and his casket was sealed as the Church prepares to bury its Supreme Pontiff. Thank you for joining us, everyone. I'm Eric Rosales. The funeral mass for Pope Francis will be held in St. Peter's Square tomorrow morning. Hundreds of thousands of people are expected to attend the ceremony, which will conclude with the transfer of the coffin to the Basilica of St. Mary Major, where the burial will take place. EWTN Vatican journalist Valentina Di Donato is in Rome with the latest.
For two nights in a row, the doors of St. Peter's Basilica have stayed open all night for pilgrims to say goodbye to Pope Francis. Since Wednesday, over 100,000 people have filed past the altar of the confession to catch a last glimpse of the Holy Father. Coming from near and far, some even wading through the night.
It was immense. We had to redo the line twice, but it was all worth it. We did the whole path from St. Peter's, and we were able to see the Pope's coffin from up close, really from so close.
Then, earlier this evening, Pope Francis's coffin was sealed during a liturgical rite in St. Peter's Basilica, ahead of the papal funeral taking place tomorrow morning. In line to see Pope Francis before the funeral, we met Father Firas Abedrabu, Cardinal Pizzaballa's former personal secretary in Jerusalem. He told us why this funeral is so significant.
It'll be special, I think, because it comes in a moment where there's a lot of youth coming to Rome. And he's a pope who paid, like all the popes, previous pope. But he personally, he was so close to the youth. He cared about them also. And some people would even say he probably organized even his death to be in this moment. I heard a bishop saying that. I don't know if this is right, but at least it's a wonderful, providential, I think, coincidence.
One of the thousands of people of all generations from around the globe was Jerris from Jerusalem, who explained that he was not surprised at the turnout.
Actually, it doesn't surprise me, because the Pope, by only seeing him, we saw that he was humble, he was respectful, and other stuff. So it's no surprise, actually. He deserved to be respected and also to rest in peace in heaven.
Hundreds of thousands of faithful are expected to attend Pope Francis's funeral in St. Peter's Square tomorrow morning. Among them, Catholic officials, heads of state, and world leaders. U.S. President Donald Trump, Ukrainian President Zelensky, Prince William of the United Kingdom, and French President Emmanuel Macron are among the leaders that will be in attendance.
It will be packed, but that's okay. He opened the doors for the Jubilee, so he's welcoming all the people that have come to see him. Then whoever will be the next pope will officially close the Jubilee.
It will be full of grace, full of grace. It will be a beautiful day. It will all go well, because when a person is good, things go well, with grace. This pope is another John Paul II. He drew more young people, while this pope, the poor, the most humble.
Once the funeral mass has finished, Pope Francis's coffin will be taken in procession to St. Mary Major, where he will be buried. The Vatican has announced that people will be able to visit the tomb in the Basilica from Sunday morning. That evening, cardinals will visit the Basilica, entering through the holy door to visit the Salus Populi Romani icon, dear to Pope Francis, and pray Vespers together, according to the Cardinal Rolandes Macricas, the co-adjutor archpriest of the Basilica. In an interview with EWTN, Cardinal Timothy Dolan, Archbishop of New York and voting cardinal in the conclave, emphasized that what the Church needs right now is trust in God's care for his people.
Whenever we lose somebody, we're invited to make an act of trust. As Jesus said to Martha, "Do you believe?" And so the church is being invited to make an act of trust. Jesus, I trust in thee. We got Divine Mercy Sunday coming up. Jesus, I trust in thee. We'll miss Francis. We wonder who can take his place. Lord, you're the one in charge, okay? The Pope's only kind of your deputy here on earth. So, Jesus, we trust in thee. You've never let us down before. You ain't about to now.
In Rome, Valentina Di Donato, EWTN News Nightly.
Also today, the Cardinals currently in Rome held their final general congregation of the week. They gathered this morning to review the protocol for tomorrow's funeral. You remember, the Cardinals gathered during this transition period in order to keep church operations running smoothly. They will resume their meetings on Monday. As mentioned earlier, President Donald Trump is one of the many world leaders who will attend the Pope's funeral. He said that he wants to pay his respects. White House correspondent Owen Jensen was able to speak to the president about the Pope.
How are you and the First Lady remember Pope Francis, sir? How are you and the First
Very
Lady?
Well, good man. He loved the world, actually, and he was just a good man. I met him twice. I thought he was a fantastic kind of a guy.
President Trump will return to the United States after the funeral tomorrow. And several U.S. lawmakers are making the trip to Rome as well. Catholic Senator Eric Schmidt of Missouri is leading a bipartisan delegation with Senators Mike Rounds, Dick Durbin, and Susan Collins. House Majority Leader Steve Scalise, the highest-ranking Catholic in the House, is leading a bipartisan delegation of his own. In his statement, the Republican from Louisiana said in part, quote, "The Holy Father humbly devoted his life in service to the church, and he was dedicated to spreading the gospel of the Lord to the world. I'm honored to represent the House in paying our respects and praying for the soul of Pope Francis." The Pope's impact on the Catholic Church around the world has been profound. Shortly, we'll look at the great impact he's had in Africa. But first, we'll look at how he's being remembered right here in America. We are joined with the Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archbishop of Oklahoma City. Your Excellency, I just want to say thank you so much for joining us. First, I want to get your reaction to the passing of Pope Francis. And online, you shared a moving photo of both of you laughing.
That was the first time I met Pope Francis. He was newly installed as our Holy Father, and it was my first visit. It was during a general audience, and they presented me to him, or I was presented to him, and I, a little self-conscious, knowing that he didn't speak English very well, or at least that was the reputation. So I was practicing my my best Spanish, and I had it all rehearsed in my mind what I would say when I stood in his presence. So I said, "Holy Father, my name is Paul Coakley. I'm the Archbishop of Oklahoma City, and I want to offer you the prayers and greetings of the people of Oklahoma." And he looked at me, and his face brightened, and a big smile on his face. He said, "Oh, you speak Spanish?" And he said, "I'm looking for somebody for Madrid."
Oh, and my goodness.
So we both, I don't know if he was making fun of my poor Spanish, but we both got a big laugh out of it. I mean, literally a belly laugh. It was a charming moment, and the photographers were there to capture the moment. So, precious memory.
How wonderful is that? And I tell you, Pope Francis recognized Blessed Stanley Rother as a martyr in 2016, the American Catholic priest from Oklahoma who was murdered in Guatemala.
That's right.
Now, this is a personal story for you and the people of Oklahoma.
He was very familiar. You know, I started to remind him who Blessed Stanley was. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Oh, I know Blessed Stanley." And he was very familiar. You know, one of the remarkable things about Pope Francis, which I was not aware of, is that he beatified and canonized, I guess, more saints and blesseds even than St. John Paul II.
Wow.
So that was at least that's what I read somewhere recently. So that's a beautiful legacy of his, saint maker, if you will.
Most definitely. And I know that thousands visit the shrine. What effect has this had on the local community?
The beatification? Oh, it's been a beautiful testimony. You know, we Catholics in Oklahoma we're a pretty small portion of the population, only maybe 6% at most. But it's really given Catholics a much higher profile in Oklahoma. And the shrine is such a beautiful testament to a life of holiness and a life well lived and a life of pastoral service and martyrdom that it's attracted people from near and far.
We're almost out of time here, but wanted to get your thoughts on the legacy of Pope Francis here in the United States. Tell me about your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, I think his initiatives will take time to really sort themselves out and be judged by history. But I think his perhaps most effective legacy may be just the life that he lived, his pastoral style, his humility, his simplicity. He was attractive to people, not only Catholics, but perhaps especially non-Catholics, people who are unfamiliar with the church and who had maybe certain preconceptions about what Catholics looked like. They were drawn to Pope Francis, and I think that's a great evangelizing impetus, I think, that he's left us.
Archbishop Paul Coakley, thank you so much for joining us. The Archbishop of Oklahoma City, thanks again.
Thank you. God bless you.
When Pope Francis visited the U.S. in 2015, he made a surprise visit to an order of religious sisters who help the elderly and the sick. Sister Constance Veit from the Little Sisters of the Poor shared with EWTN's Monse Alvarado her memories from that day.
It was very exciting, and yet it was also quite calm. He came to us after the Mass of canonization. We had to stay home and watch the Mass on TV so that we would be in place when he came. So he arrived, and the whole meeting took place with just the sisters. He requested to see us by ourselves in the back half of our chapel. He went around and greeted each sister individually, and so we could say whatever we wanted to him. And I had rehearsed all afternoon. We only knew that morning that he was coming, but I rehearsed because I wanted to thank him for the attention that he gives to the elderly. And so that's what I said to him. So he looked me right in the eye, and we, you know, I talked to him for maybe a minute, and then he moved on to the next person, and he went all around a circle. We were about 40 sisters all in a circle. He spent extra time with our two elder sisters, one of whom had dementia and was no longer verbal, but he leaned over and gave her a special blessing. The other one was a centenarian from Colombia. So they spoke in Spanish, and I'm not sure what they said because I don't speak Spanish, but they seemed to be enjoying one another's company. And then he encouraged us in our ministry, saying how important the ministry with elders is. And then we said a Hail Mary together. And then it was over before we knew it. But it wasn't like once he got inside of our chapel, it wasn't rushed. He was very calm, and he looked at each person and took his time with each person. So I would say the whole thing was over in 20 minutes, but it was just a great encouragement for us.
About a fifth of the global Catholic population is in Africa. The Vatican says that over the past year, 7 million Africans have converted to Catholicism, and Pope Francis did a great deal to raise the profile of that part of the world. On his several trips to Africa, the Holy Father would speak passionately about peace, reconciliation, and social justice. He would often highlight the resilience of the African people. Pope Francis paid a great deal of attention to the nation of South Sudan, including an extraordinary moment in 2019 when he knelt and kissed the feet of the nation's president as well as his political rival. We're joined with Father Don Bosco. Thank you so much for joining us. What would you say has been the Pope's impact on Africa?
Thank you for having me. Pope Francis has had a very significant impact on Africa since he started his papacy in 2013. He has shown that he had the best interests of Africans at heart, that he came on the continent and was able to visit 10 African countries out of the 68 that he visited across the globe outside Italy. And while on the continent, he was able to say things that resonated very well with the ordinary people. He spoke about the challenges that Africans face, and he was able to point out very clearly where the problem is, especially when he would prophetically talk about, don't exploit Africans, right. Don't exploit the resources on the African continent. So cautioning the foreign society, but also showing that he has the best interests of Africans at heart.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the Pope's visit to the continent. As we mentioned, in 2019, the Pope knelt down and kissed the feet of South Sudan's rival leaders. How symbolic was that moment?
That was one of the greatest extraordinary gestures that he showed to Africans. You know, in his frailty, going on his knees and kissing the feet of the president of South Sudan, his vice president, who is his rival, and other political leaders, and eventually making a point to visit the country and meeting the people there. I mean, following up his action of kissing with the physically going there, even after postponing it, you know, for some time. That was, I think, for me, one of the greatest signs of his love for Africa and for the world's youngest country, South Sudan.
Yeah, and during a visit to Kenya, one of the 10 African countries that he visited, the Pope actually spoke to an informal church there and a modest church there. He declared where he said, these are just unjust situations, but you are not alone and the church is with you. The Pope is with you. How significant was that?
In fact, that marked his first visit to the continent in 2015, November, when he came to Kenya in what was a three-nation visit. And yes, that in a way set the tone. And I must, in a way, also acknowledge with appreciation the role of the nunciature, the people representing the Holy Father on the continent, that they were in touch with him. They were able to highlight to him the challenges that people face. And when he came, he spoke to people's hearts, reaching out to the marginalized. And so showing his mercy, compassion, in a way, representing Jesus among the people and making them know that, yes, God is journeying with you in whatever situations you are going through.
And what changes have you seen among the faithful in Africa?
Well, change takes time to acknowledge, but it's clear that over his papacy, the statistics have continued to show that the number of Catholics on the continent, in comparison to other places in society, the vocations to the priesthood, to religious life, these numbers have increased steadily. And we can say that, yes, in his papacy, Africa has continued to show that it is the axis of the Catholic faith in the future.
We're going to leave it there, right there. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, and God bless.
And just a reminder, you can see the Pope's funeral in its entirety right here on EWTN. Coverage begins tomorrow starting at 3 a.m., and it will include the procession to the Basilica of St. Mary Major, something that hasn't been done in 100 years. We have still a lot more to come on EWTN, including the sound and the fury. Lawmakers have been home on break, and that's given voters a chance to speak their minds.
I'm Owen Jensen at the White House, where earlier today I was able to ask President Trump directly about Ukraine and a very big meeting taking place there today. You'll see that story coming up.
Welcome back. President Donald Trump considers another concession with the Kremlin as he tries to end the war in Ukraine. The president says the region of Crimea will stay with Russia. This comes as the president's special envoy traveled to Moscow to further the peace talks. White House correspondent Owen Jensen questioned the president this morning before he left.
Eric, President Trump had a lot to say when he answered my question. He made it clear he wants to save lives and end that war.
U.S. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff meets with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Moscow.
How are you, Mr. President?
Fine, just fine, thank you.
This marks their fourth meeting since February as the U.S. seeks a peace plan for Ukraine. I asked President Donald Trump for an update on the high-profile diplomatic mission.
The Witkoff-Putin meeting. Any updates on the Witkoff-Putin meeting, sir? The meeting right now. What do you hope to see transpire?
They're meeting with Putin right now as we speak. And we have a lot of things going on. And I think in the end, we're going to end up with a lot of good deals, including tariff deals and trade deals. We're going to make our country rich, but we're going to try and get out of war so that we can save 5,000 people a week. And that's what my aim is. I want to save 5,000 young men. They happen to be mostly Ukrainian, Russian. 5,000 young Ukrainian and Russian men. And that's a big honor if I can do it. I think we're pretty close.
My question to President Trump comes after Russia launched another round of fiery attacks against Ukraine.
This was the most terrifying night I have experienced.
A member of the Ukrainian parliament witnessed Thursday's attack against Kyiv. She's concerned if the U.S. lifts sanctions against Russia, then Russia could build up its military and attack again.
As a mother, there is one thing I'm scared more than living through this terror right now. I'm very much scared that in a couple of years, when my son is old enough to serve, he will be called to serve again because Russia will have military capacity to attack us again in a couple of years.
Meanwhile, deadly blast. Russia's top criminal investigation agency says a senior military officer was killed today by a car bomb just outside Moscow. The second attack on a top Russian military officer in 4 months.
Some European leaders accuse Putin of dragging his feet in the negotiations. And President Trump today urging Ukraine's Volodymyr Zelensky to immediately sign the papers on that rare earths deal. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you so much, Owen. Well, this week ends Congress's longest break from Washington since Donald Trump re-entered the White House. For most lawmakers, that meant more time with constituents, and for some, aggressive questioning at town halls. At Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia's town hall last week, despite her staff checking visitors' identification at the door to make sure that they lived in her district, police escorted out a half a dozen people for disrupting the meeting. Two were tased and three arrested. She used that as a springboard to go after Democrats.
The Democrats have been rioting. They are the party of violence. They are the party that... Go!
Some Republican leaders have said publicly that Democrats are targeting these town halls to cause disruption. Democrats say that's not the case. In another town hall, Congressman Byron Donalds of Florida was engaging with the audience and not dismissing the concerns some constituents had about DOGE.
What oversights are you imposing that Elon Musk can't get? Rick Grossman. Okay.
What they are examining right now is inefficiency in the federal system. This is something that President Obama wanted to do with President Obama.
And on DEI?
If your whole belief is not possible without a three-letter word in every training manual, and I'm sorry, we don't agree.
And Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa got an earful during his town hall about deportation of Abrego Garcia.
We have a due process, and it was not followed. And the Supreme Court ruled that he needed to come back.
Okay.
So Trump said, nope, I'm not going to do that.
So
why do we even have a Supreme Court if they're not going to follow the ruling of the Supreme Court?
It's not just Republicans being held accountable. Washington State Democrat Congresswoman Marie Glusenkamp-Perez received an earful for supporting the House-passed SAVED Act, which requires proof of citizenship to register to vote. Some even suggested she was bought.
Only U.S. citizens should be determining the outcome of American elections. And any idea that I am standing to disenfranchise people is patently false. The first bill I introduced in this Congress.
And both the House and the Senate will be back next week. Lawmakers on committees will be putting together the spending levels and policy details of President Trump's agenda. Republicans hope to pass the so-called Big Beautiful Bill and send it to the president's desk by Memorial Day. But that may be a tall task. Well, up next on EWTN News Nightly, honoring Pope Francis, we take a look back at some of the sights and sounds around Rome and the world this week following the death of the Holy Father. It's been 4 days since the passing of the Holy Father, triggering reaction around the world and preparations in Rome. We take a look back at the week of events in Rome leading up to the funeral taking place tomorrow morning.
At 7:35 this morning, the Bishop of Rome, Francis, returned to the house of the Father.
Aspergiamo il corpo del nostro Papa Francesco. Rendiamo grazie a Dio.
Corpus Papae nostro Francisci, deferibus in Basilicam Vaticanum. Redemptore meus
di tutte le nazioni, perché nel rispetto della giustizia formino una sola famiglia nella pace e siano uniti da sentimenti fraterni.
Requiescat in pace.
Amen.
We want to thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Eric Rosales. Have a good night. God bless y buena suerte.